Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name is Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back. We got lots to go over. A couple rumored, not from GW, so these are from outside sources. Gives a quick peek into the world of Gene Stealer Cult, which is rumored to be coming out not this coming weekend, but in 2 weeks. Pre-orders are supposed to go up this weekend, allegedly. Also, we've got two tournaments to talk about, as well as a few news from the world of Vigilus. So if you remember way back when, Harkov World Climber said he would take Vigilus in the name of the Black Legion in 80 days. Well, it's been 30 days later, and what has he provided us so far? An FAQ. So the FAQ came out for Vigilus and chapter approved. In case you missed it, nothing to be alarmed about. So the basics to be aware of is the nifty Ultramarine shield guys could only intercept one shot per turn. And if you were planning on combining any of the Eldar specialty attachments with Anari, sorry, Craft World only, they specified that. Other than that, I think there were a few points drops for orcs, and there you go. That's the whole shish kumba. Oh, I know what I forgot. The flesh hounds, they're their funky heavy flamer. It went from assault 1 to assault d6. So you've got a couple more opportunities to bark at your opponents.
So, well, its bark is worse than its bite now?
Yeah, apparently. So. Even though the bark actually did get improved. But anyway, which reminds me of my game I had last Friday. You know how Scar Brand has that he yells at people and it causes damage?
Right.
Yeah, he yelled at one of my flyers and knocked it out of the sky. That was pretty cool. I was like, really? That's what happens when you got one wound left and your movement's severely hampered. Just can't get away from him. Anyway. So let's go over some of that nifty Gene Stealer Cult goodness that's coming out. So all this is coming from Fayette 212. Some of the rumors came out right after we closed up recording last weekend. And it's a good thing because some of them have been disproved over the couple days following their release. But some of the stuff is quite interesting. Again, this is from two rumor mongers. Actually, it was three rumor mongers. That have shared this both on Daka 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 and a few other posts, and Fayette 212 was nice enough to collate them for us. What's interesting is that they're all quite similar, so it would appear that these three rumor mongers have the same source. So right off the bat, these all were supposedly obtained at the open day. And so the Gene Stealer Cult motocross bikes, they have a 14-inch move and have a blanket -1 to be hit, which is quite popular. The assassin has a sniper rifle, surprise, surprise. The big scenery thing, that big drill we were talking about, it's basically two Mechanicus floors, a gargantuan drill. Not only does that allow you to redeploy your troops, but it causes earthquakes, which can then further cause damage to your opponent's models. Don't have a lot of details. I'm probably thinking like kind of like Emotech used to do with the lightning back in the old days. Anyway, there are six cults to choose from. So kind of like six chapter tactics. There'll be six cult traits, including the Pauper Princes, which are featured prominently in the background and lore of Vigilus. And apparently there is one of the characters, he prevents deep strikers. So now you have to deploy at least 12 inches away instead of 9 inches away. And the big thing that everyone's talking about and seems to be growing legs is the whole cult ambush has been redone. What's old is new again. So if anybody played, Ray, have you ever played Space Hulk?
No.
So Space Hulk, if you remember that scene from Aliens, not that, you know, Space Hulk borrowed from the movie Aliens at all. You know, they have the rangefinder and they have little blips on the radar when the aliens got closer. And then they realized that, wait a minute, yeah, the whole scene, they should be inside the room. They realized they're in the ceiling. So in Space Hulk, you do the same thing. You put blip markers down. And as the game progresses and you get like a Marine gets too close to a blip marker, the Gene Stealer player has to reveal it, you know, what's behind it. You can be either one, two, or three Gene Stealers. Surprise! So supposedly they're bringing that back to the Gene Stealer cult. The idea is that you would set up these blip markers on the field, and as soon as an opponent gets within 9 inches of them, you flip them over and reveal what unit it is. Supposedly there are also some ways of sending out decoys. So you flip over the marker and there's nothing there. And there's also one of the characters that we saw the fancy model for, the guy with the map, you know, kind of a little disc thing on the side. He can shuffle those markers around. So once you set them up, you can redeploy them, which sounds kind of neat. Yeah. This is a really old mechanic. I mean, this dates back to like old school, you know, historical wargaming. This was always a big thing. So not surprised they brought it back. It's just the only thing I've always had a problem with it in the 40K universe is that the markers are usually like a poker chip. Then what was behind that little blip? Oh, it was 28 Gene Stealers. Ah, it's a little bigger than the blip. But we'll see what happens. So as mentioned, the map guy gets to move the markers. So it's the guy with the loudspeaker. Prevents deep strikes within 12. The sniper bike guy apparently is in HQ. The female Magus is just an alternative Magus models. And Ray, you were concerned about this. I guess they heard you. All those other characters are considered elite choices. So you're not going to be, yeah. So you're not going to be clogged with a whole bunch of HQ choices, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
There are also 6 psychic powers, warlord traits, and a whole bunch of heirlooms. Very customizable. Same thing with. There's only one patriarch, but there's a lot of options to mix and match to make them unique to your play style. For those of you who really like adding guard units to your Gene Stealer cult, they're still, you can take an Astro Militarum Detachment. They do not get regimental bonuses, so they just because they're muscular guys running around the jungle, if they're part of Gene Stealer cult, they are not catechins anymore. But they do get a blanket +1 leadership across the board for all Astro Militarum models. Interesting enough, you cannot use any named characters from the Astro Militarum Codex, which I guess would make sense. And yes, you can take a Baneblade with your Gene Stealer cult.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't. Still no special characters for Gene Stealer cult. All pretty much generic models. So that hasn't changed. And then last but not least, this is interesting, the Gunslinger. So I only saw him for Kill Team. I didn't realize he was available in the Codex. But apparently he has a special ability that he rerolls misses once he's killed the model. So I
thought that was awesome.
I thought that was kind of interesting. So,
you know, he's in Kellermorph is in one of the short stories that they did a little while back. I still have to read that.
It was good. It had a nice twist at the end. So it's pretty clever. Because it not only involves the Kellermorph, but it also involves the custodes, which are another custode. Yeah, those the police? Arbites. Yeah, Arbites are in it as well, that story. So it's kind of cool. It's just a level of play that you don't see. It's in the 40K universe, you just don't see it in the base game, because it's just, you know, a couple guys in the street, you know, duking it out in an alleyway. It's pretty cool.
Right.
So interesting couple rule. I'm still not sold on this rumor about the blip markers, but I don't know. We'll have to see when this all comes out, how that all works. Maybe if the blip markers are super big, I don't know. There's lots of things to, maybe that's what you can do with all your blast templates that you've not been using. So, so all you laser cutters out there who had custom markers, now's your chance. Spring onto Gene Stealer cult blip markers. And the future as things come around. So we still have about 50 days left until the rest of Vigilus comes out. Still no hints of what that could be. A couple things we actually posted on our Facebook page. You can check them out. but there appears to be some interesting artwork floating around. If you're a sharp viewer, you could find them. And one of them is if you look at the Urban Conquest, I guess it's the box cover, and you look at the Space Marine scouts, they're pointing at something, and we got to kill that. And you look at, what are they looking at? So there's a whole bunch of indicators, and there's like a Havoc squad. And then all of a sudden, there's this weird crab-looking thing. And it's very Black Legion, so it looks like it's about the size of one of those floaty bloat launcher lawnmower things from the Death Guard. But again, it's a pretty grainy picture off to the side, but I thought that was interesting. Some of my Empyrean friends say that the type of bolters that the Marines were holding is not what comes with the model. So is that this artist licensure where there's a weapon upgrade? Not for sure. So lots of little things kind of popping up here and there.
I'm excited to see what the new stuff coming out brings.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to that. So lots of course, we'll keep you up to date as more things break, and look to our Facebook page for updates throughout the week. After the break, we'll go over the two GT events from last weekend. See you guys in a few minutes.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
And we're back after the break. Two key tournaments to talk about over the past weekend. We start in lovely Virginia at Huzzah Hobbies Hammers in the New Year. At, surprise, surprise, Huzzah Hobbies. And your top eight looks something like this. In eighth place, Justin Cook with Tau Sept. I wonder if he's bringing back his Pacific Rim list that he made popular. In seventh place was Daniel Paulini with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, the current Captain America, Sean Naden, with Inari. In fifth place, Austin Wingfield with Thousand Suns. Fourth place, Andrew Gagneau with Death Watch. Third place, Stephen Four with Imperial Knights. You guys might remember him from the Long War podcast as Juice. In second place, Nick Nadavati with Evil Sons. That's right. Top player in the ITC has once again switched factions, and he is now playing Orcs. Which means that your number one player at Huzzah Hobbies was none other than Tony Kopak with Astra Militarum, one of his favorite armies. So those who don't remember the name Tony Kopak was the original Nick Nadavati. He was the first player to win major tournaments in the same season. And then he and Nick are actually very good friends, and they have been on the ETC team for quite some time. So no surprise that the two of them duked it out for the top spot. But a very competitive field as you also get a chance to look at some of the names as you get down to the outside the top eight. Really strong field in terms of who was at that particular event, and a good showing, obviously a good tune-up for LVO for the East Coast players. Our next event, we go across the Atlantic Ocean to lovely England, specifically I believe it's Southport. It's the name of this lovely city for the Last Chance GT. And interesting enough, I was looking at some of the names. Of course, a who's who of top players from the UK. But one or two names surprised me, and I don't want to give it away just yet. But we'll talk about some of those people that we saw there. But let's talk about that top eight. We start off in eighth place with Tim Dagdahl with Death Watch. Interesting. Second tournament. Second time we've seen Death Watch in the top eight. Seventh place, Nathan Whitbread with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, Marcus Hinson with Imperial Knights. Fifth place, Conrad Bartkowski with Death Watch. Fourth place, you're currently number two ITC player in the world, Mike Porter with Chaos Space Marines. Another change in faction there. Bless you. Third place, Simon Pritis with Orcs. Second place, the dapper Alex Harrison with Taucept. And in first place, interesting enough, he's an American. What's he doing in England? Hey, he's winning the tournament. Eric Hoger with Drukhari, going a perfect 5-0 on the event. So interesting to see some Death Watch. I have some last-minute faction changes right before LVO. Alex Harrison is a previous LVO winner. Mike Porter's already announced that he'll be at LVO. He's currently number 2 on the ITC rankings. But he's mostly known for playing the Golden Boys. What are they called?
The Custodes?
Custodes, yeah. He's been a Custodes player most of the season. So for him to play Chaos Space Marines, heresy. If you ask me, he's coming to his senses. But anyway, it's interesting that that's a pretty big switch in factions there. And just like the last event, if you scroll down outside of the top 8, some key players and some top players in there. So interesting to see how that all shook out there in Southport. So speaking of the big event, we were talking about a little bit about prep and getting ready for such a big event coming up in just four weeks now. So we're going to talk a little bit about tournament prep in our main discussion. We'll get to that right after this break.
What are some things that you want to take to a large tournament like the LVO? You may not necessarily feel like you need to bring at a regular tournament.
I think the key is just tightening everything up. So my biggest thing I work on is now's not the time to be coming up with a list. Now's the time to learn your list. My magic clipboard is another key thing. So I have, it's not the army list I give my opponent. It has kind of a quick summary of all the units and their stats, but it also has like little notes in the side, like deploy together as needed, or in some cases, certain matchups. And okay, these are the models I want. Like I actually have the math hammer written out on them. You know, so it's where it goes, okay, this is how many guard equivalents they will kill, how many marine equivalents they will kill, and how many wounds they'll put on a knight. You know, so I know, so I don't have to think about it. I also have my stratagems on there too, and I have them sorted by phase when you need to play them. And I found that to be extremely helpful. So I know, okay, it's the end of the movement phase. Do I want to play any of these three stratagems? Yes, no. Okay, move on. Shooting phase, which ones do I play? it's also seeking out players that you don't have enough practice against certain factions. And they may not be the top faction, but you know you're going to play against them. Like right now, the faction I'm most worried about is Tau. I haven't gotten a game against Tau since the Codex dropped.
Are you prepared to go constantly through the Codex as you need, or do you have a cheat sheet, or do you just make sure that you know everything?
No, I have a cheat sheet. The idea is to play enough games, so eventually I will know everything. But I have a cheat sheet just in case, you know, that moment of panic. The only reason I would open the codex is because my opponent doesn't believe me. He's challenging me on a rule. Here you go. And the cheat sheet should all fit on one piece of paper. So that's what I have on the magic clipboard is my big cheat sheet.
And I take it it's one-sided.
It is one-sided. The only thing I have on the other side, I think, is the deployment zones. So, because that's always hard to find in the rule book. So that can, you can waste a good 2-3 minutes trying to, oh, roll the 4. What deployment is that? I just have it ready to go.
So I take it the rule book is not something you generally do. You think to pull out during a tournament.
Yeah, same thing. I do have the electronic version of the rule book, you know, for the on the tablet. But again, the rule book is there strictly for if a ruling is challenged, I want to need to refer back to it.
Do you think that having a very basic idea of how you want to place your armies depending on the deployment is important, or do you think it's more of a fly by the edge of your seat kind of a thing?
I think it's important to know what your game plan is against that opponent and how to know that ahead of time. So you have to worry about, you really want to only focus on executing your game plan, not coming up with a game plan. So no, flying by the seat of your pants, you want to reduce that to a minimum. And so when it comes to deployment, absolutely. Give an example, which armies do I want to screen? You know, where I set up my army is far forward with screens up front. Other ones, do I just want to hunker down in a corner and hide and not present any targets? Or were there targets where I'm going to deploy right on the line because, quite frankly, they're not a threat to me on turn one? So kind of three examples I just gave. Where do I want a lot of screens? Gene stealers. You know, these Tyranid lists where the gene stealers can charge 40 inches. Want to be very specific about what my screen is and make sure that the models behind it are more than 3 inches away so he can't consolidate into a second unit. So leave his gene stealers hanging in the wind so I can blow them away on my turn. If I'm playing more of a shooty list and he especially takes old school where he has to get a point by killing a unit in the first turn, what's my deployment look like so I can minimize targets? So I'm hiding behind as much terrain as possible and knowing which units I'm going to put in deep strike. And what's my maximum number I can put in deep strike? And then the third one is, if it was a good practice game, for example, I did on Friday, played a player who was a Khorne demon list. He had like two guns in the whole list. So I didn't have to hide my units as much. I can put them up on the line because I knew he's going to either charge me or I'm going to charge him. I didn't have to worry about being shot. So, other key things I'm worried about, we talked about the cheat sheet, what's on the cheat sheet. Make sure I have also this goofy stuff. Like, do I have pens, you know, with me? Do I have the dice? I have objective markers. And, you know, I have one of the key things they're really stressing at LVO this year is having markers to show buffs, whether from psychic powers or aura effects. So making sure you have things that can mark those. Interesting enough, I'm also making sure I have markers for command points, you know, holding those on in handy. So they're clear how many command points have been spent. From a hobby side of things, absolutely. It's been a lot of painting and get that done. But interesting, I ran into a little quirk today, and now I got to make an emergency order. I actually took what I was painting and put it in my bag and realized it doesn't fit. So I had to rearrange the foam situation in my bag so it'll make the trip. So all of a sudden, those little things like that become, what becomes a simple trip to the hobby store is not going to be a simple trip to this large event. So making sure that they're handy and ready to go. So I'm going to have to see if I find they do have the foam I need online at the manufacturer. So be able to help condense so everything fits into the bag accordingly.
Yeah. I do know that you definitely want to have what you're going to be carrying your army in set up. I mean, even if you pull stuff out to play games between now and then, being able to be prepared the day of, it's very important.
Yeah. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? A lot of butterflies, a lot of distractions. You're running into a lot of people. The noise level is going to be high. And so that's the other thing. The last thing you want to be thinking about is how does my army work? Where is everything? You know, just you want to be able to, once the dice roll and you get your first pairings, you're ready to go and not have to worry about anything other than the game at hand. There's not much you can do about the other games anyway. So just make sure you execute that game to the best of your abilities.
What do you do to prepare day of?
Day of, that's a good question. Because the smaller tournaments, it's a lot easier because it's, you know, for me, it's the longest tournament I go to usually locally is a 2-hour drive, even the short ones are only a 1 hour drive. So for me, the biggest thing is I get up early and I clear my schedule to make sure that everything outside of 40K is in its place. So I don't have to worry about anything. So usually that means, get breakfast on the table, make sure the kids have what they need for the rest of the day, double check with whether it's my wife watching the kids or my parents watching the kids, they have everything they need. Kind of remind the kids what they need to get done with, if there's any homework that needs to be done. A lot of times, because I do all the cooking, I got to make sure that there's a meal prepped already. You should do that the night before, but sometimes I have to do it that morning. So it's just a simple reheat for dinner that night, and I don't have to think about it, and have everything they need ready to go. Little things like that. That's probably my biggest deal. For this larger trip, the bigger things I need to worry about is, first of all, do I have everything? Because once you leave the house, you're done. Vegas is what, about a 5 hour drive from here. So if you,
and then you're gonna be flying now, so even worse.
Yeah, flying is another thing. I'm not a good flyer, so in terms of, so I love airports, but I hate the process of flying. So it's like, okay, make sure you have everything. Looking also, your bag is ready for travel, so it doesn't get banged up. Real easy for spindly models to break off in flight. So make sure the packing is good, making sure you have to reinforce certain parts of the packaging so you get through airport security. For the most part, they usually do pretty well, but every now and then you get a one or two pieces that breaks. You just gotta make sure everything's ready to go. Goofy stuff like army list. That's, do you have 5 copies? Make sure that's done ahead of time. Trying to think else I do for the big events. Once I've arrived at on site, probably for me the biggest thing is touch base with the family. Get that, because usually with the time zone difference, there's a bit of a, that way I can, because from there it's going to be a roller coaster of running into friends, and the social aspect of the hobby is going to really take over. And, but then the last thing is probably from 9 o'clock on, I'm going to avoid alcohol. Definitely going to work on hydrating. So lots of water. It does come back to get you, especially, three rounds by round three with all that shouting, trying to get over all the background noise, and not shouting because you're yelling at somebody, just to be heard over the background noise. It'll wear on you, so you want to make sure you're ready to go the night before. It may be hard to sleep. You're in a foreign bed. You're in a foreign town, and you might have a roommate, someone you've not been with, shared a room with before. So it's like, okay, all kinds of weird things. And make sure those are all set, and then that way, when you hit the ground running the next morning, oh, that's the other thing. I usually try to do a dry run. How do I get from my hotel room to where the tournament actually is? Usually smaller tournaments, not a big deal, but Bally's is huge, dude. It's easily, I think even staying on site, I think it takes 11-minute walk and 12-minute walk. And just so I know where I'm going in the morning. That's the last thing you want to be is running around with your display board. Oh, I'm trying to find the tournament. And you're just, as you're dodging between the slot machines. It's not a good look.
Yeah, no, you definitely want to know where you're going. Last thing you want to do is take the wrong turn, and you're, next thing you know, you're in the buffet instead of the tournament hall.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the buffet, it's great and all. The other thing, too, is just to be all serious. There's a couple times where, a couple of my opponents got confused. They end up in the narrative side. Well, I saw 40K, I walked over there, realized that the wrong event. It's so get them pointed in the right direction. So
now, with it being a 2-day event, it's pretty easy to mess yourself up overnight. What do you usually do?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Especially out of town, 2-day events are hard on me because it knocks me completely out of my rhythm. So problem one is round three usually doesn't get done until about 7. And then although Vegas has a tremendous opportunity for eating out, some great dining experiences, none of them are quick. Even the fast food is slow there. So you're kind of, usually I'm done with dinner by 6:30, 7 is a late night for us. Usually in these second, you know, that day between the tournaments, you're not getting your food before 8 o'clock. So already you're kind of out of sync. You're eating restaurant food, which, you know, hits like a 10-ton hammer because you haven't eaten anything since noon. And even that, depending on what event you're going at, lunch may have been on your own. I can tell you, I made the mistake. It's actually one of my biggest mistakes I've made is my opponent is running long. So we go into lunch and play, in which case, I didn't get anything to eat. So now it's, you know, 12 hours of not eating, and then I'm just going to put on a quarter pound greasy burger with extra mushrooms, you know, on my empty stomach. And that usually comes back to get me later on. So those are that being cognizant of, you know, what's going on that night. The other thing too, which, you know, everybody talks about the party atmosphere, you know, your limits. If you can go out and party, you know, power to you. I miss those days when I was in college and I could put down a 6-pack of beer and be ready the next morning to do whatever. I know those days are behind me, but actually the thing that gets me the most when it comes to these tournaments is you're surrounded by other players and they're all talking. And I'll never forget this. One of my first times I was traveling, listening to all these guys and what they were talking about, I was like, that totally psyched me out. And, you know, stand your ground. You belong there. You bought a ticket. You had a game plan. You've done all the steps beforehand. Don't let these guys, psych you out of, you know, saying that, okay, I don't have an answer for this. I may have brought the wrong list. I don't have an answer for that. It's good to pick everyone's brain, but also take it with a grain of salt. You know?
As someone who's never actually gone to a tournament, this is kind of me adding on. I always think it's a great if, you know, you're part of a group of people and you maybe just so happen to have someone who, for whatever reason, isn't playing in a tournament. Because there's nothing quite as nice as being when you're stuck at a table trying to get your game done and you're thirsty because you didn't grab that one extra bottle of water, but you got a buddy who's right there and you can say, hey, will you grab this for me real quick? Or just, you know, knowing someone who's walking around, at least on a friendly basis than that, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can't echo that enough. It's so good to have a team with you so you know you have some friendly faces to come with you. Whether it be, hey, we went ahead and got a table for us, so when you're done with your game, join us for lunch so you actually get a chance to eat. Or, oh my God, he's not going to eat, so we got something to go so you can eat. That's a big deal. The extra grab of water, the full disclosure, one of the things that really helped is there's sometimes that break between lunch and you know what your pairings are. And hey, I don't know what to do with this. And having just to talk over, prioritize, you know, your target priority should be X, Y, and Z. And that really helps just kind of settling the nerves and setting a good game plan of what needs to be gone through. So that's another good reason. Also just the little things too, in terms of like, I'd never been to Vegas until the first time I went to LVO. So I didn't know where and what's, you know, the where to go and what to expect. So having a couple guys on the team who knew Vegas, let's go in this particular area and knew where to go and pick a path so he didn't have to be like wandering around, which is, yeah, like I said, at least we knew where to go for dinner and we got our food between 8:30 and 9. If we were still walking from restaurant to restaurant, we may have never eaten. So that was kind of a big thing there. So that helps a lot as well. But yeah, that whole going with the team is a big deal. First year I went to Nova in DC after moving to Phoenix, that was unsettling. Not that it's a bad event, not at all. It's a great event. But the whole idea was, I just remember getting off the plane. I'm at baggage claim looking for my army. And like, I seriously don't know anybody here. And I'm not exactly sure how to get from the airport to the event. And luckily, I ran into two people who recognized me from tournaments. They're actually two California players. And you're like, you coming? And I was like, yeah, I'm coming. And so it was kind of a nice to, I got lucky that I ran into them.
And I think one of the hardest things to remember when you go to one of these massive tournaments, and that's really what this one is looking to be, is at the end of the day, it's just a game, and definitely don't let what happens get to you.
It is. And also, I think it's important, the best way to not let get to you is kind of set some expectations before the tournament starts. And I was actually doing some math, and Ray and I were talking about this. You know, one of my goals for the every season is at least to be best in faction. Well, is it possible for me to be best in faction? Yes. But, you know, the planets need to align 3 times for that to happen. So at this point, I'm like, okay, what's a more realistic? And given how massive LVO is, you know, we talk about the standings. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Give you an idea. 25 players are going to go 6-0. Now, most tournaments we talk about on the show, if more than 2 players go 6-0, it's a big deal because then there's a tie for first place. But generally, if you can rattle off 6 consecutive wins, you've pretty much won the tournament. Given the size of LVO this year, you're going to be 1 of 25, and only 8 of you are going to the finals. So sometimes you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. How are you doing and where that all fits in, and manage those expectations as it goes through. So the other thing I would say too is if you're really there to maximize your wins, play every game. Nothing drives me nuts more than people that, why did you drive this far and pay all this money if you're going to drop out after round 4?
Okay. I never understood that. You know why? You go to a tournament, it's in a hole. Maybe it's in a hole or a state. Why are you dropping out at the end of day 1?
Yeah, I don't get that.
Now, sure. Vegas is Vegas. It gets right down to it. There's plenty of other things to do. But you did already pay for that tournament. I don't think it was cheap.
It's a fair cost for what you get, but absolutely, it's not something. It's not change you just have lying around in your couch cushions. The other thing I look at too is I had a bad experience when I went to BAL. Again, not a criticism of the tournament. Me personally, it was just not having a good day. I had a horrible day 1. And it was a kind of an epiphany for me in my competitive career because day 2, there were several drops. I think something like 25% of the field dropped. So all the muttering of me, man, I could have done better. I actually played the same schedule as if I had won an extra game on day 1. So I had a good understanding of, okay, you thought you were good enough to be 2-1 instead of 1-2. Put up and shut up, because basically with all those drops, I kept playing players that were higher, had more wins than I did as opposed to the usual Swiss bearings. And learned really quickly if I really was good enough or not. So, especially in an ITC-type format, you're trying to pick up points here at the end of the season, showing up for 6 games will put you ahead of quite a few players who are going to drop turn 5, turn 6, because of the lure of Vegas or friends or disappointment. So, yes, stick it out. It'll be a lot of fun. So, yeah, so really looking forward to it. I think the other thing is kind of an added bonus, especially with Games Workshop being much more involved in the tournaments, is they're right there. That was one of the really coolest things I liked about the last time I went to LVO. And this is a guy who went to several games days where I didn't get that giddy feeling of, oh my God, that's the guy from White Dwarf. It was more like, well, that looks cool. And I've seen that terrain in a White Dwarf magazine. But the idea that you're, you know, the guys that do the video stream are going to be right there, standing right, and you can talk to them, preferably not when they're doing their job. But that was really cool. And of course, we talk about the social aspect of this. Yeah, it was probably my biggest regret from the last LVO is I didn't get a chance to hang out with everybody that was there, because saw people, hey, we'll get together later. And, you know, one guy gets, you know, we get crossed over, one reservation ran late, the other person was going out with another person, we'll meet up at a different restaurant, and next thing you know, it's Monday morning, we didn't get to spend any time together. So those are the other things I look forward to, is, you know, seeing people that I just haven't seen in a really long time. So looking really forward to that as well. And then the last thing is embrace the hobby. there are going to be 800 armies there. And they're all going to be painted per regulations. That's a pretty awesome sight. Are all of them going to be Golden Demon winners? No, but it's still going to be really cool to see some really cool stuff. Because for some people, it's time to bring it when it comes to the hobby side of things. And I think that's always really cool to look at and just walk around, especially on day one before the pairings start. Take a look at all the armies that are out there. It's a pretty awesome thing to see.
So I think, or to pin it down to just a few bullet points, the important things are, have your army prepared. Have your essentials, such as your codex, your dice, measuring device, and any other extra things that you want to take along just to help keep you informed of what you can do or what you should do at any given time. And you got to be in the right mindset.
I would totally agree. Yeah, those are the three big ones.
Do you have any other advice for someone who might be going for the very first time and may or may not be going by themselves?
If it's your first time, soak it in. There's nothing like it. These bigger tournaments are just so much to look at. And I think at that point, just enjoy yourself. Just don't get caught up in the, I have to win or the championship is on the line. Just taking in the experience, and then I think take a step back after, you know, on your way back home and go, okay, what do I want to do for next year? And different people have different perspectives, you know, in terms of I want to improve my win-loss record by a little bit better. I need to brush up on the missions better since my first tournament. Or it might be like, yeah, next time I'm going to do something different hobby-wise, you know, work on some conversions or add, you know, spruce up my display board or whatever you have. All those key things are the driver. I always come out of these more energized to do more than I do when new releases come out. It's seeing the other players and feeding off their energy is always my big thing. And as a first time player, that's essential. Don't get bogged down with the win-loss record, even as a competitive player, because it's just, you know, 4-2 at LVO this season. You could be in 90th place, you could be in 240th place, and it's still a good weekend. Welcome back after the break. Hopefully that found that last segment helpful for all you guys heading off to LVO. Meanwhile, let's take a look at the ITC top 10 and those vying for the championship with just 4 weeks left in the season. In 10th place, hanging on by his fingernails, Archon Skari with 651 points. 9th place, Joshua Death with a 1-point lead over Archon Skari for 9th place. Brandon Grant with Astra Militarum has a 2-point lead over Josh Death for 8th place. Andrew Ghani enjoys a 5-point lead, holding on to 7th place. A newcomer to the ITC top 10 is able to leapfrog in. In 6th place is Malik Amin Rubio with 662 points, 4 points ahead of Andrew Ghani. Matt Rutt holds down the 5th place spot at 694 points, so about a 32-point lead over Malik. Nick Rose with his Gene Sealer Cult, 4 points ahead of Matt Rutt. And then 1 point ahead of Nick is Trent Northington for 3rd place. At 747 points, interesting, 747, we'll want to be taking one of those to get to LVO this year. It's Mike Porter from the UK holding down 2nd place, and your leader with 765 points, none other than Nick Donovati, still holding down that top spot after his 2nd place finish at Huzzah Hobbies. So, Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
All right, we've got the Aberdeen LVO Warm-Up GT at Game Freaks in Aberdeen, Washington. The Winter of Woe at BetaCon in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. The Golden Sprue Cup GT 2019 40K at the American Legion Melvin Rhodes Post 1231. That's in Rensselaer, New York. Oh. And then the Siege of Augusta Grand 40K Tournament at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel Augusta in Augusta, Georgia.
Sounds great. Don't forget also March 2nd and 3rd, Scorched Earth Open. It's a tournament that we run here. It'll be in Glendale, Arizona. You can find us both on Best Ghost Pairings. Tickets are available through the app, as well as check out our Facebook page at Scorched Earth Open. So those are the events coming up in the next week. Next week, we'll be back with more tournament coverage, as well as talk about new releases and some more review as we take a look at who's vying for the championship with only, at that point, 3 weeks left in the ITC season. Until then, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.